Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to episode 3 of The Front Three, the new football podcast from me, Adam Boltwood, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, good, yeah. And the stat man himself, Dave O'Brien.
Good evening, good morning, or good afternoon to you guys.
Or
good
depending night. On where you're listening.
Maybe you're listening as you go to sleep.
So, technically this is late. It's supposed to come out Wednesday.
Yeah.
But obviously it had to come out late because...
Champions League.
Champions League.
Yeah.
Same again election. Next week, you know, a couple of people were up in arms about that.
Really?
Yeah, they weren't happy. Apologies. But, all we can say is sorry.
And get a life. If it's really
no,
to you.
It is important that people know when it's coming out.
Yeah, no.
And when they can listen to The Front Three. People
still
should
get a life.
Organising their lives around it.
Yeah.
In
that case, then. Anyway, get a life.
Look, let's get on with it. So much talk about the Champions League semi-finals, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal, Chelsea, Tim Sherwood, questions, Memphis Depay, all this good stuff.
I need a slice of Memphis Depay.
So, if you want to tweet us your questions, then you have to go on Twitter and tweet us at @TheFrontThree. Got some great questions this week, but before we get to them, Lawrence, we've got to talk about Barcelona 3, Bayern Munich 0.
Yes.
So
the almost perfect tie for us in many ways.
Yes. Yeah. So
top of the show on the front three is 3-0 Barcelona.
Exactly.
A home domination against Bayern Munich and their old manager Pep Guardiola,
who said nothing can stop Lionel Messi, and he wasn't wrong, was he?
Yeah, 2 goals from Messi. Although I think he's wrong in saying that nothing can stop Lionel Messi.
What can possibly stop him?
Well, he has been stopped before, hasn't he, Dave? I mean, there's been in La Liga they have stopped him, and it did look as if both sides had almost realised we need to play a little bit more physically in this game. So it looked as if neither side really minded that they were fouling each other at times.
I think it really works out with Messi is that he was found out before playing as a false nine. Let's say, you know, you block him off, you create like a midfield square right in front of the back four, and it sort of shuts his down his space. But now he's playing this wide right position where he has the freedom of the world. It's going to be difficult. How do you stop him now? Would have been an interesting battle to see if Bernat had stuck with him all game. It seems like Bernat was playing a sort of wing pack position ahead of him than behind him. There wasn't a sort of a solution to Lionel Messi. There wasn't a block in front of the back four as well on that sort of left hand side where Messi would come in on that right channel. They just had no answer for him. And if you look at his game by numbers, it's absolutely incredible. 2 goals, 1 assist for the Neymar goal. Created 4 chances, completed 32 passes, and he completed 10 take-ons. He dribbled past 10 opponents. That is absolutely incredible stats, right?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And not only that, but the system... But in fact, you know what? Despite the fact that Bayern lost 3-0, both systems did seem to work quite effectively to go punch for punch, didn't they?
It was the first goal, I think, was so important. Obviously, yeah. Barcelona got that first goal. Imagine if Lewandowski had scored that chance that Müller set up for him. It would have been a completely different game, but... What I was always sort of, you know, aware of before that game is how Barcelona lost to Borussia Mönchengladbach. They got hit on the counter-attack twice and lost 2-0. Exposed by Munich where they're weak down the flanks at their fullbacks. And that's kind of what Barcelona sort of did, giving the ball to Messi early, getting it to Neymar early. Being quite direct in that manner. And I think that's really, really complemented by their style this season.
So what can Pep do then?
Sorry?
What can Pep do now?
What can he do now?
Well, I mean, I didn't really like the narrative he was going back to his club and then losing 3-0. But what does he do now? He's 3-0 down in this leg with what people were billing as, you know, one of the favourites for the competition. What tactics does Pep set up in the second leg? Because effectively, he's setting up against a side who would love for them to have to attack when they're 3-0 down.
Exactly. So based on, you know, you're saying he's got himself in a difficult situation now, because what can you do in the second leg? Were his tactics wrong in the first leg, do you think? Because you're saying, okay, they were set up well, you know, okay, it was 3-0, but Bayern didn't play particularly badly, as it were.
Well, Gary Neville pointed it out in the commentary, didn't he? It's hard to go blow for blow with Barcelona when Barcelona stretched the play so much, and Bayern Munich looked like they were rushing all over the pitch at times. They lasted about half an hour, I think, and then their intensity started to drop off.
So it's the difference then. It's the Barcelona team in their peak, that front three, you know, they got the perfect, the 11's very settled. Bayern Munich, however, had a few key players injured, Ribery, Robin, Alaba. Yeah. Do you think that had an impact in terms of
obviously they had less pace. Lewandowski leading away some of their counter-attacks gave them less pace. Alonso had to push a little bit further up at times to push the attack further. Yeah. And it would, like you say, that they lacked that box at the back, which generally would be Alonso patrolling that area. And what they did was they just got between that and completely took him out of the game. And that's why we have the gif or the meme of Boateng. I feel so sorry for him. What do you think it feels like to become a meme? Do you think he even knows that he's a meme online?
Yeah, he
is. Do you think?
He is.
How do you know?
Get wound up by a teammate. Team Muller would be straight on the internet.
He's on Twitter.
Pinning it on the wall in the changing room.
There'd be plenty of banter.
Do you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Messi got all the plaudits, but you could argue that Rakitic and Alves were very important to that win.
Yeah, weirdly, Alves actually coming in for some praise for once from anyone.
Yeah, well, he sort of drifted out of the world football, didn't he, last season? Didn't really play as much from this season. I think he's been the best right back in world football. I'd definitely say that. He's won more tackles than any defender in La Liga this season. And it just shows that with Messi on that right hand side, the likes of Rakitic and Alves have to work twice as hard defensively. But it just works so well. Rakitic playing a sort of a shuttler role, you know, winning tackles, winning the ball back. For the Messi goal when he sat down Boateng, Rakitic won the ball then gave it to Messi, and that's the sort of functional role that you need in this side. With Alves hitting back to form, you remember some assists this season that he sort of created out of absolutely nothing. That goal against Real Madrid that he pinged the ball to Suarez, and then you have another assist against PSG in the Champions League where he just created something out of absolutely nothing, another Suarez goal. And I think players like Alves and again Busquets mentioned before, people forget how good they are, and Piqué, these players are performing at that top level once again. I think that's just, you know, it's going to help Bayern Munich, this is going to help Barcelona to win the Champions League this season.
So, I'll ask the obvious question then. Messi or Ronaldo? That's what everyone's talking
about. How's that an obvious question now?
Because you talk about how good Messi is,
you have to talk about
how good Ronaldo is.
Who cares?
Do you not care?
No.
Because you've been asked it like a million times in your life.
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference.
What did you say?
Okay, I'll dive in here. It was Ronaldo. It was 2014.
Mate, he loves it. You just dived in and you hit your head on the floor. Yeah. You're bleeding out at the bottom of the pool, Dave. I'm going to have to come and get you. Ronaldo seems like a lovely guy. Genuinely, why bother with this?
When Arbeloa scored the other week and Ronaldo...
He got a bit mad.
Did you see that?
Is he losing?
You see that?
Is he cracking under pressure?
Yeah, but you know what? I just still don't care. Like, I don't care about having to... The question is, why are they better? Why are they this so much further ahead than everyone else? Why is Messi so much better than all these other players? And why is Ronaldo scoring hat-tricks in that league? Could you say that it's because La Liga is not as intense a league and therefore they can save their big performances for the Champions League and be surrounded by great players?
You could say that. Or you could say Messi's better.
Yeah, maybe. No, maybe you could. Maybe you could. But again, I don't care.
So Lawrence doesn't care, but Dave, what do you
think? Dave does.
Messi, obviously brilliant in 2015. He is now the best player in the world by a country mile, I'd say. Ronaldo was pretty anonymous in that game. He scored a goal, but he wasn't in the game. He wasn't the Ronaldo.
He scored a hat-trick at the weekend.
He did score a hat-trick at the weekend, but I'm saying in the Juventus game.
How many goals will he have at the end of the season? How many goals has he got?
Ronaldo has scored more goals than Messi this season.
Yeah.
But Messi has scored 27 goals.
Put the mic in front of your mouth, yeah.
27 goals in 2015 and got 14 assists in 2015, this calendar year.
Yeah.
And we're only in May.
Yeah.
So I think this season is going to be for Messi. Ronaldo was last season.
It does seem like that.
Well, I mean, La Liga will finish soon. So, I mean, they're not going to get much more chance to score many more goals.
So it does seem like after that Ballon d'Or, it literally seems like literally a day after the Ballon d'Or ceremony. Is switched again.
Yeah.
And Messi's back in his absolute peak.
Yeah.
You know, Ronaldo's sort of going, you know, he's lost form a little bit.
He scored a hat trick last weekend.
No, okay, yeah.
Against,
for his
against
own
granted,
ridiculous standards.
But yeah.
Over the period of time of the last few months since January,
yeah.
His form has dipped slightly.
But they're still a great and powerful side.
So do you think these two players are like motivating each other? So in terms of, you look at the Ballon d'Or, you look at Ronaldo scores against Juventus. He's the top Champions League scorer. Messi the next night scores two. Now he's the top scorer. Do you think there is like...
No, because Messi was brilliant before Ronaldo, wasn't he? And Ronaldo was brilliant before Messi.
Before they came into each other's like...
Yeah, I think it's very much that the press creates this, doesn't they?
Doesn't it? They're just head and shoulders above everyone else, the two of them.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you have to put them in competition.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say it's the press. It's just inevitable, isn't it? they're on the opposing teams. It's not like necessarily a press thing. It's like a natural.
But you know when the press go, oh, pressure is building, and you're like, wait, is pressure building, or are you just saying pressure is building?
Well, pressure is building then if somebody's saying it.
Well, if someone's saying it, then they're the one building the pressure. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Speaking of Messi and Ronaldo, so can you see Bayern Munich getting back into this leg, or a Barcelona through, potentially to meet Real Madrid in the final, Messi Ronaldo final, everyone goes mental.
Because it's been. I think it was Football Daily last week who put that picture up, and they said, you know, every time that it's been Barcelona in one leg and Real in the other, they've never gotten through to face each other in the final. So now the question is, can Juve in the second leg keep their lead, basically?
So are you giving Bayern a chance, though, is what I'm saying? A Barcelona
Not at all. I don't think there's anything they can do tactically to change it.
Chase the game now.
Yeah, it's, you know, if they go 3v3 versus the Barca front three, you know, Suarez, Messi, and Neymar, you've got no chance, absolutely no chance.
If any manager can do it, it's Pep, but he's at a depleted squad.
Yeah, I think they do miss their three best players, Robin, Ribery, and Alba. I think they are their best players. And that's what they missed.
Yeah. So, what about the other semi-final? Juventus...
What, Juve, who we don't know much about, according to most people previewing the game.
If you remember, guys, I want to take you back to earlier this year.
Dave's going to blow his own cock here. Sorry, whistle here.
Talking Dave, predict Juventus.
Talk about yourself in the third person, wanker.
To be the dark horses of the Champions League this season.
Yeah.
So, I did say Allegri would bring a new style to Juventus, which would make them competitive in the Champions League, if you remember, with the 4-4-2 diamond.
He wasn't wrong.
Which I was completely correct with, I'm just going to say. But anyway.
Yeah. You pick the one team at the top of Serie A with a new manager who seemed to be going quite well at that point. Dave.
In hindsight,
it's true though. I mean, tactically, Dave did pick them out, and you know, credit to you,
Dave.
I mean, how much of what you said did they employ against this game against Real?
Well, it was absolutely awesome, wasn't it? We saw the midfield diamond of Juventus versus the sort of 4-3-3, 4-4-2 out of attack for Real Madrid. What Real Madrid really struggled with is that holding midfield. We've talked about it, you know, until the cows go home, that Xabi Alonso is missed so much. And Toni Kroos can't do that defensive role. The massive point where you were looking at that game tactically was between Marcelo, the left back, and then the left centre half, Varane. That space was absolutely massive. You see, for the first goal, Marquisio picks it up. Marcelo goes towards him, and the space between the centre half and the left back is huge. Tevez waltzes in, has a shot, they score a goal, and it happened frequently through that half. Another interesting thing was Ramos. He was absolutely awful, but Ancelotti didn't. So Ramos is the defensive player out of their midfield three, let's say. Why did he not switch in with Kroos and then get Ramos to sit to protect that really weak spot of the Real Madrid team?
That was a strange one.
It seems like Ancelotti thinks, for me, he's not a pragmatic manager and doesn't react to things. Like, first of all, you've got to stop Pirlo. Then you've got to sort of, you know, if a team's unpicking you, you've got to react. And he didn't do that at all. And that's why Real Madrid lost.
I believe it was you, Dave, who also said, though, that Pirlo probably wouldn't be suited to this game.
Yeah, but I said that because everyone in the past at this level of the Champions League knows that you stop Pirlo.
Yeah, and they haven't.
So there's obviously the stats of coming out. Pirlo, you know, covered the second most distance on the pitch, completed the second amount most of passes. They didn't stop him down. He didn't have a direct opponent. There wasn't Park Ji-sung on him. There wasn't anyone that can just get on him and stay on him. You know, you've got James Rodriguez. Ramos could have done a role there. Ramos could have man-marked him, and Real Madrid would have come off a lot better, but they let Pirlo dictate the game.
The Italians and the Spanish are a fiend for I don't know, some superstition. And I feel like Juve have got trying to create that kind of superstition around this. Do you know what I mean? They're like, we've not won it for a while. This is our chance. You know, Pirlo's like, if I get it, I'll go. And, you know, they're building up all this kind of almost intangible energy that they are now believing in themselves. So Buffon and, you know, all those guys are building themselves up. Mm. You look a bit like Buffon with your hair today, Adam.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this then. So you're talking about Ancelotti.
Yeah.
Tactical mistakes. He's not, you know, pragmatic in the game. All the reports before the game were talking about how his job is at risk, basically. He's getting sacked.
In the morning.
Regardless, some were saying even if he won the Champions League, he's getting sacked.
Yeah.
So what do you make of this whole situation?
They're saying Zidane's coming through.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, so what do you make of this?
How good is Zidane if they're sacking Carlo Ancelotti to bring him in?
It's not so much how good is Zidane, it's more how, you know,
how malleable is he? How much can they control him as a puppeteer from above?
How unreasonable is Perez getting rid of Ancelotti? I know last season you could sort of say they were a header away from losing the Champions League final.
Yeah.
So do you think he should be sacked this year if they lose a league? If they get knocked out of Champions League.
But should and will are two different things.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying should.
I don't think he should be sacked.
We're saying he probably will be, regardless.
What I do wonder is what will Zidane try and do tactically at Real Madrid that Ancelotti will do differently? And I just wonder if maybe Zidane, typifying the Galactico mentality, which was very inward looking, quite quiet at times, and sort of, I don't know, it spoke for itself in many ways. And it seems like Real Madrid not having that right now. I wonder if that's kind of the way that they need to go, is have someone who understands what Galactico is, and that's why they're trying to bring Zidane in.
I think the worrying thing about Zidane as well is that at the start of the season, when he took over as Real Madrid Castilla boss, they were like bottom of the league. They were absolutely awful, and now they've got a wealth of talent for the league. They've pulled it around, but they're still sitting in seventh position. You look at Pep Guardiola when he took over Barcelona, the C team, I think they took. He changed the style. He really was proactive in his formations and his thinking, and it doesn't look like Zidane has that same ability to go to a lower level and push it through. I think Zidane probably needs a few step ups before he is Real Madrid manager, one of the biggest clubs in the world. I think it'll be a massive gamble.
Why is Perez trying to bring him in?
I'm not sure he is. I mean, I wonder if that's maybe all pressure on Ancelotti. And I wonder also if someone like Jurgen Klopp doesn't fit, really, does he?
Let's talk about the other manager then. So Allegri.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't a very popular hire when he came in the summer.
Well, no, because he was an ex-Milan manager.
Of course.
He baited the Juve fans before. Yeah. His car was egged and stoned and everything. Yeah. But that's all part of it. That is Italy. You can go between the two.
But how impressed have you been with him, seeing as he came in at a very late stage in pre-season? It was late July. He's won the league already.
Yeah.
That's the fourth consecutive league title.
And he's on for a triple.
And now, looking good to get into the final of the Champions League, which is something they haven't done for a long, long time.
I read an article about him at the weekend, and it said, if Ancelotti's sides are the brawn, then Juve are the brains. Ooh. And that's what Allegri maybe brings to this European style of football that Juve are playing, is the intelligence to be able to face a side and use some of their strengths against them, which is what they did really well against Real, is that Real thought they were strong in midfield and very often could just bypass the other team's midfield, and Allegri just outthought them and thought, if we put Pirlo there, we'll outthink Real in this game. And that's what he's done apparently very well throughout the season, because I haven't watched enough Serie A to be able to express an opinion on him, but from seeing what the small amounts that I have of Juve, it's that they always consider what the opposition are going to do, and then because they've got such a strong squad, it allows them to respond to those guys and intelligently outplay the other team. And sometimes they've been outthought. But that happens very rarely for them under Allegri.
I think what's interesting, obviously, in domestically, Carlos Tevez has pretty much bailed them out with his absolute brilliance. But what was interesting in the Champions League game, Juventus played three different formations within the game, and they changed so well between. Obviously, Juventus have been playing a back three for the past X amount of seasons under Conte. So Juventus have been playing the back three under Conte, and now it's really changed his flexibility between a 4-4-2 diamond, which he started with, and then he brought one of his midfielders off and moved to a 3-5-2 with two strikers to keep the pressure on Real Madrid. They won the penalty in that formation. And then at the end he went to a 3-6-1. So three tactical changes in the same sort of tactical philosophy of keeping a lot of players centrally in terms of your midfielders, having that superiority in the middle, and then having a really solid back line. And then at the end of the game, when Real Madrid was sort of pushing for the win, they've done it a lot this year, they just cross the ball a lot and try and overload the opposition's defenders in the penalty area. That's just an absolute joke for, Barzagli, Chiellini and Bonucci. They should be laughing about that.
Yeah.
That Chiellini tackle on Ronaldo on the 92nd minute.
That's fantastic,
was
wasn't it?
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That is probably my favourite tackle of all time. It's just to kill a counter-attack. It was looking about a three Real Madrid versus about four Juventus. But just to kill it, to take the yellow card, is absolutely brilliant defending.
What about Ledley King's tackle?
Sorry.
That's the greatest tackle
of all time.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
Which is the one where he just keeps going?
That's Sol Campbell.
Yeah, so that Sol Campbell tackle is my favourite one of all time.
In that first leg, so they obviously missed Modric.
Yeah.
They obviously missed Benzema.
Yeah.
What are you thinking for the second leg?
They'll try and control the midfield. They realise that Pirlo is going to be the fulcrum, but I'm wondering if in the second leg, Allegri will just start and be like, fuck it, get rid of Pirlo, or negate the threat that Pirlo was in the previous game and put the emphasis somewhere else. And then Ancelotti is going to have a load of players out there who are briefed for something else, and Allegri's already changed it up. And, Dave just extolled the virtues of the way that Allegri plays his game. So, that is what I imagine is going to give him the edge in the second leg. The problem is they're going home, so
I reckon they'd start with a 3-5-2. I reckon, like you're saying, get Pirlo out, put Marchisio in there, someone that's more defensively reliable, someone that's more energetic, and have a midfield of Vidal, Marchisio, and then the lad that came in, Straruro, is that his name?
Yeah, along those lines.
Straruro.
Straruro.
Raggy.
Who do you think is going to go through to the final? Like, what are you thinking? I think Madrid might come back into this, you know what I mean?
You know what?
They've got the away goal. They don't need one goal.
I know they got the away goal. You do just sort. There's something that's nailed on about Juve this season.
Yeah, great.
Which I like. Which I want.
Part of me wants to see Madrid v Barcelona. Be so hyped! Like, what a final!
No, I know it's standard
because it's
El
Clasico. But I feel like with Juventus, it wouldn't quite be the same occasion, sense of occasion.
But that's the thing is, I think wouldn't it be amazing?
It would be a better game.
If Juve is the extreme underdogs, I know we're now saying they'll go through because of the narrative of Barcelona being the, you know, the huge side. Yeah. That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
It'd be incredible. Like,
I think that would be better than the played out narrative of El Clasico.
Yeah, Real Madrid, Barcelona. Again.
Yeah.
Right.
El Clasico's been a bit boring this year. Barcelona have just won El Clasico both times. They've just been too good. Is that correct? Double check that.
Let's put it this way. Barcelona have been better in both El Clasicos, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Right.
And Real Madrid have shown their strength, but Barcelona have outthought them. I would love to see what the brain, as I've already said, of Allegri does in a Champions
against
League
that
final.
That front three. And maybe he can stop them.
And you know what? That then I understand Juve have still spent a lot of money in relative terms in their own league, and they've still spent money to keep up with other people. But I would love to see it turn back to that cerebral style of management that was, you know, kind of 2005, 2006 time, where Mourinho, you could argue Rafa was up there, with those like thoughtful managers, as opposed to just let's throw all these people on and then go from there. And that's why I'm sad that Pep's down in this leg, because, you know, it's going to be difficult. The ideal final for me was Germany versus Italy, but, you know, Germany, Italy versus Spain is good.
It's going to be, I think, as I mentioned before, it'll be better to have this tactical battle between Allegri and Luis Enrique. Could be really interesting to see whether they do go for, say, 3v3 at the back, you know, the likes of Chiellini, Barzagli and Bonucci against Neymar, Suarez and Messi would be really, really interesting to see.
You do worry there that those guys will be exploited by the pace that the other team
have. Yeah, and I've got a bad feeling that Chiellini is going to get booked in the second leg and he's going to miss the final for that wonderful tackle on Ronaldo.
Yeah, which then you think is stupid, but I mean, really he should have thought about that.
He should have done, yeah, but I do think that potentially there's got to be some other rule with this. You know, you get two yellows in a semi, you're out the final.
Don't we say this every year, though? I mean, because we've seen... Didn't we see Alonso miss the final?
We've seen Darren Fletcher.
Yeah.
The,
other prolific midfielders.
2011 final, he would have been key in that game.
Yeah.
You remember he got
the
second yellow for the penalty that wasn't really a penalty, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, and United looked all at sea because he wasn't there to do that.
His energy there. And it's going down the years, there's definitely, you know, Keane missing the final.
Yeah.
Scholes missing the final.
Yeah.
There's just been so many good players that we have missed for picking up maybe needless bookings in a way.
Well, then you think, you know, do you deserve it? But, well, I mean, you know, if you're stupid enough to get the yellow in both.
But it's like, you sort of, you know, you make a brilliant decision, like that Chiellini decision was brilliant for the game.
Yeah.
You know, do you not make that decision then? Do you let Ronaldo go through and your team gets punished?
But you don't know they would have been punished. It looks brilliant because it looks like he's taking charge. But ultimately, maybe he's cost his team. The problem is we're talking about ifs, and maybe
and
he won't have cost them. Yeah, I love buts.
Very interesting. So we're saying you want Juve Barcelona in the final.
I want Juve Barcelona.
Your heart and your head says it's going to
join
be
me. My head and my heart says
you have convinced me, actually. Yeah. I think in Real Madrid Barcelona, a huge occasion. But
David and I put a compelling argument forward.
Okay, so let's move on to the questions then.
Yeah.
The Champions League chat. I think it was worthwhile doing a little bit late this week.
No, let's pat ourselves on the back. Yeah.
Hopefully you can hear that. So, first question is from Brad Reason.
Hey, Brad!
He asked on Twitter at the front for you getting your questions if you want to. He said, who do Liverpool need to sign in order to get top four next season?
Memphis to... Oh, shit. you know what? No, Liverpool did not need to sign Memphis to play because they've got enough players. They're overloaded in that section there.
What's the one position they really need to improve in the most?
Defensive midfield.
Okay, and who should they be signing, ideally? Schneiderlin, Kondogbia.
I mean, Schneiderlin, they would have said, would have been a great signing, but I don't see him now leaving.
Or even if he leaves, a lot of other clubs are in from around.
There's a lot of other people.
Arsenal.
I don't know a defensive midfielder that suits Brendan Rodgers' system.
Because you want a ball player, but then you need that physicality in there as well.
That's part of the problem, is that I think Liverpool expected Lucas to kind of be that. As a Brazilian, originally he was much more attacking when he came to the club. And his, I mean, essentially his injuries have cast him out this season. But what they need is someone who is a slightly more authoritative figure than Lucas.
Yeah.
And someone who can sit alongside Henderson when Gerrard's gone, and that's not Joe Allen, unfortunately for Allen and Liverpool. They need someone there who can put a tackle in and basically break up a game.
And Mbeumo would be perfect for Liverpool as well. He can dictate the play. He's a big central midfielder from Marseille. He's been absolutely awesome this season.
Yeah.
Other players that you could potentially look at.
I just don't know how much of a Liverpool player he looks.
I'd say he looks... I don't know why he doesn't look right, because he's a bit too good. If that's not in a bad way, but
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Is it doesn't seem like a very Liverpool-esque. That's almost what I think. Why Memphis Depay wouldn't have fitted in at Liverpool?
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about Memphis in a minute.
Yeah.
But you know, that's the big issue. Is that actually he seems like the perfect signing for United?
Yes.
And maybe that's why Liverpool are where they are. Is because, you know, they've had to look at someone. What you're basically looking at is another Coutinho in that sense. Do you know,
yeah,
you're looking at another
someone that's obviously maybe been cast out. Who's been linked with this week? They've been linked with Kovacic from Inter Milan.
Yeah.
Who has brilliant stats. Like, he has fundamentally brilliant stats. He completes a lot of passes,
yeah,
take-ons, tackles and that type of thing. Whenever I've seen him, he's not been in the game. He's a drifter. He'll be in the game for 5 minutes and then he'll get out of the game for like 15 minutes and he'll appear again. So maybe it is a signing that they could make. You know, that is gone under the radar of European football now, but Liverpool could pick up and re-go for it. For me, I think Liverpool need a striker more than anything.
They are getting Origi back, and what I'm saying is, I know they miss Suarez's goals, but part of it is that this season they've relied too much on the same old system they played last season, or tried to, and they've adapted it a little
have
bit.
Firepower in order to
to be able to not be defensively right. So I wonder, does the side need a bit more balance, and therefore you give the likes of Sterling, Markovic, all the other guys who were playing a Memphis Depay position a bit more license to roam, which maybe they don't have right now.
What's quite interesting with the Premier League table, I was looking at it today, just on relegation, which is obviously an interesting subject at the moment.
Regulation.
Liverpool have only scored 49 goals this season in the Premier League.
Compared to?
Let's go to compared to right this second.
Yeah. Cut this bit, Adam.
I don't want to edit this later.
Cut this bit, Adam.
I can't.
I'll do it as quick as possible, mate.
Let me ask you a question while we wait for Dave.
Sure. Step. Go for it. And then we'll pick up the Liverpool chat. Don't unpark it.
That must have been thrilling listening for everyone.
Unpause on your iWatch.
Go. So Liverpool have scored 49 goals in the Premier League this season compared to 101 that they managed last season.
Yeah, exactly. They crossed
100. Which is pretty big. And I think the really interesting thing about that is they've scored 49 this season. Suarez was directly involved, scored or assisted
52.
3 goals last season.
There you go.
So that is incredible.
So not only that, but Suarez has left and he was involved in those. Other people have then dropped off and Liverpool are scoring even less because of that. So, I mean, that's what we're saying. We're saying Liverpool need, because they are actually a bit sorted at centre-back, if you get that from right. Say la. Adam wraps it up. Say la.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Gimby, says Adam.
Apodarca.
Oh,
yeah. Apodarca.
7. He's gone. Should Pogba leave? And where should he go? So today's rumour is...
leaving, it does leave a good midfield shape.
I think that you'd be silly to leave Juve at the moment.
Yeah. Could win the Champions League, as we just said.
I think Pogba will leave after Juve get the 5th league title in a row. And then he'll go. Because a lot of people are talking in that way, aren't they? They're saying one more, and then they've set a record, and you know, they've done everything they can, effectively.
I think he'd be brilliant at sides like PSG, Man City, but no real...
I'd hate to see him in a Man City.
Yeah, that's the thing, no real love there for him. you know, Real Madrid might be good. Barcelona would be quite interesting. No, to move their midfield on again, you know, revolutionise it again. But
no, I want Rakitic.
They're
banned,
aren't they? So
yeah. Oh, they're banned, aren't they? Yeah.
I'd much rather. I know it's disappointing. I'd like to see Pogba go to a side where he'll be the difference.
Yeah.
But then I, you know what? Maybe we're overbilling him, and actually he needs to go to a side like Juve where he has a steady income.
He's 22 years old. Can you believe it?
Chelsea.
Imagine him under Mourinho.
Yeah, sitting next to Matic. That would be a disgusting midfield.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Horrible.
Another question is, who is going to get relegated? It's being asked by Sam Jennings.
Burnley will be relegated.
QPR are done. And then you pick Newcastle are going
to. Are they in free fall?
They're in absolute free fall. So
absolute free fall.
Say one word to describe it.
They've lost the last 8 games.
Unheard of.
And the other thing.
Well, it is actually. That is a record, Adam.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's actually unheard of. Yeah.
Well, if you look at teams getting relegated in the Premier League, one of the key things is you look at goals conceded. Newcastle have conceded the second most goals in the Premier League. They've conceded 60 goals. Only QPR have conceded more. That is a massive indicator.
But John Carver's the best manager in the Premier League.
Oh, I forgot about that. John.
He said that today.
I do feel sorry for John Carver.
Is he going to bring the 3-4 out?
John Carver's going to bring out the 1-2 in the next game, I think, on a manager. I feel sorry for John Carver, although there was an excellent animation this week by Fit by Football or whatever they are on YouTube. They're absolutely fantastic. Where it's go and find it online. It's really very good. It's Alan Shearer trying to shop in the Newcastle store, and the guy running the store is John Carver, and it is very, very good. Go and take a look. That's all we need to say. Newcastle will be relegated. Sorry.
I'll just tell you who Newcastle have got left in their 3 games. They have got West Brom at home.
Oof.
QPR away.
Yeah.
West Ham at home.
So they'll win one of those maximum.
Maybe they could win one. I know they're on an awful run, but maybe, just maybe.
But then other teams are going to win around them as well.
So well, let me tell you this. Hull.
We've got a tough one.
They've got Burnley at home next week. Winnable. And they've got Spurs away.
Yeah.
And then Man United at home. But again, you could say Spurs not on the best form. Man United, three defeats in a row for the first time since, what was it, 89?
Sack the manager, sack the board.
Sack them all. So it's just very hard to tell, but you're going to say Newcastle. That's what you're saying.
Sadly, yeah.
Newcastle?
Yeah, I just think they're an absolute.
Might not actually be terrible. Might not be the worst thing.
Absolute joke, mate. I feel sorry for Carver.
Joke, mate.
I feel sorry for the 50,000 lads that turn up every week and they're,
and lattices.
The atrocity of football.
Rubbish. Yeah.
Skippy140 says, what do Arsenal do? What do they need
in
to
general?
Do? What do they need to do?
What do Arsenal do? Well, they're a team of footballers and they professionalised their team in the late 1800s.
Next season.
They will.
What do they need to do that? So every year we always say, Arsenal should be challenging next season. They're going to be challenging. And then
they don't.
They never do. But there's something different maybe this
goalkeeper, centre back, defensive midfielder.
What's wrong
with Ospina?
Striker.
What's wrong with Ospina?
Champions League against Monaco was terrible. In one of the biggest games of the season, I think it was absolutely awful at home.
All right, new goalie, new centre-back.
Yeah, you know, the likes of Koscielny is brilliant. Mertesacker isn't.
Had our best season.
You know, they need someone that's young, mobile, that can play next to him. And Mangala would have been interesting at Arsenal. Obviously, he's not gone to Arsenal.
Yeah.
But he's been a bit dodgy as well.
Sacco would have been interesting at Arsenal.
Decent ball player.
If but could.
He just looks like he'd fit in at Arsenal. He looks like one of those guys. I mean, you know, he's got the Eurostar back to Paris if he ever needs it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it works. London's quite closely linked to Paris. I would like to see Sacco there, but I like him at Liverpool, so.
Next question.
Buy some players is the answer to that one.
And it's better, one last thing on the Coquelin Cazorla relationship. They're really blossoming at the moment. I really like that.
BFFs.
But I think they're just too small. It's one of those things where you've now got to have a physical midfielder in your midfield to be at that top level. You know, it's a Vidal. Arguably at Man United, Marouane Fellaini's given that extra option. Busquets at Barcelona. Real Madrid are lacking that. That's why they're not going to win the Champions League this season, what we said.
You either want that or Alonso. You've got one or the other.
It's either you choose Xabi Alonso or you choose someone that's going to go around kicking people.
Yeah, yeah.
And the day you need that.
You know what I love? The phrase today on Arsenal Fan TV, which I saw, was santidextrous, which means that you can play the ball with both feet. Oh,
such
lovely.
A good player.
Yeah.
He's
got crap hair, though.
Yeah,
not to judge him, but he genuinely, you know what he has hair like? He has hair like, you know when one of your dad's loser friends turns up at a barbecue and you're like, what is that on your head?
Cool,
and he's just turned up in like a 2005 BMW M3 and he steps out and he's like, all right, mate, yeah, wicked. No, come on in. Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. And he comes in flip-flops and you're like, fucking.
Hugo has just, you know, he's just stepped up and he's elevated it to the next level and he's just gone, who is the best player of all time?
Of all time?
Now, I'd say, us personally, we could probably only choose someone
who's the
Pope of our era that we, you know, have actually seen either live or we've seen an actual whole 90 minutes of more than once. Someone who does things you can't even imagine. Someone who does things that, you know, just no one else can do. It's got to be Harry Kane, the Ooh. Best player of all time.
Wow. Okay. Great.
Oh, no, sorry. No.
Sorry.
Lionel Messi. Personally,
can I?
You could. You know who I'm going to put forward? Sorry.
You know who I'm going to put forward for this?
I don't know. Continue.
Kenny Dalglish.
Wow, that's a great suggestion.
One of the best football players ever to grace the British League. Won Europe.
Yeah.
And then, do you know what I think makes him a better player? He went on and was a fantastic manager. He won the Premier League.
He's the best player.
Well, he won the Premiership. But that's what I'm saying, is that your legacy as a player is then continued afterwards. And Kenny Dalglish was magnificent on the pitch. Read the game beautifully, played some of the best players of all time and sat them on their bloody arses.
So see what? Yeah, that's true. Well, I haven't seen enough of Kenny Dalglish. Even like Maradona, Pele, I've seen YouTube clips. I couldn't say, oh, he's definitely the greatest full time.
Well, no, but that's why I put him forward, Adam, is because your knowledge is limited compared to mine.
Definitely small. It is Messi. Let's be honest with each other. But
it's a difficult argument, David. It is Messi. You're right.
It is Messi. Very difficult argument. But my favourite player that I've ever seen, you know, when he was at his peak with Kaká, you know, he was absolutely brilliant in his three or four years at AC Milan when he was awesome, absolute world beater. So
inside the foot, outside. That pass in the Champions League final to Crespo, maybe one of the best passes of all time.
Well, one of the best goals I've ever seen at Old Trafford was Kaká when he made Heinzer and Evra run into each other.
Yeah.
Side footed it home, really cool. Edwin van der Sar, one of the best 1v1 keepers at that point. So good, so explosive, but then obviously lost his pace, went to Real Madrid, bit of a mistake.
Now he's in the MLS?
Now he's rocking it in the MLS, scoring free kicks for fun.
Orlando.
Yeah.
Orlando.
So what are we saying? So
we're saying Kenny Dalglish. I think we find that. Yeah.
Lionel Messi to be a manager. I reckon he'd be a terrible manager.
Yeah. No. But this is what I'm saying. Is I've been listening over the past week to some interesting stuff from Kenny, because obviously next week is the anniversary of Blackburn winning the Premiership, right? Kenny Dalglish. I'm putting Kenny Dalglish forward as the greatest player to ever have graced
the
planet.
Big.
Look him up. Look Kenny Dalglish up, and you'll see some fantastic reading of the game.
Yeah,
but I'll
never be able to see 90 minutes of Dalglish.
Henry Winter will agree with me.
Sorry?
Henry Winter will agree with me.
Okay. Well, you and Henry, you know, you can have Dalglish. Me and Dave will have Messi. So, the next one is... Well, we sort of already answered this. Will Ancelotti lose his job if he doesn't deliver the league?
I think he'll lose it whether he delivers
or
not.
If he doesn't deliver it. I don't think there's actually any other questions. There's a few hard ones. Best Premier League of all time. Maybe we'll save that for another.
Best Premier League player of all time.
Team. It's like I'm not quite sure if that means 11.
That Blackburn side. That Blackburn side.
Or like, yeah, what was the greatest team. Like side,
Tim Sherwood, Alan Shearer, 99. Chris Sutton, Tim Flowers.
Oh, come on. Like, I was thinking.
Carlos Tevez, Cristiano Ronaldo,
yeah,
Rooney.
Maybe
yeah, that was one of the best teams of all time. Can I also say, maybe one of the best midfield threes ever is Gerard Alonso Mascherano. That was a pretty formidable Liverpool team that lost the league that year.
Great balance as well. We mentioned before about the tackler, the physical player. They've got the passer and they've got the creator. Perfect.
Who's the best midfield three of all time is my question.
Lampard,
Michaela Strachan, Frank Lampard.
Do you mean like played on the same side, or are you just saying like, oh, if you could?
No. I'm saying that played, because my argument would be it would be that Barcelona treble that was
treble.
It's got to be Busquets, Xavi, Iniesta.
The problem is Busquets lets that side down, doesn't it?
No,
because what you can say...
He's the best defensive midfielder ever.
Dave does love him.
Dave does love Busquets, doesn't he?
He is. He's just unbelievable. Send your biscuits.
Really? Yeah, literally, I do not believe that.
Yeah,
don't say Chelsea side. Best Premier League team of all time, Manchester United.
Okay, 09, 99, 08?
Not the 99 side,
7,
no.
7, 08.
Yeah, the better team. They were just such scintillating football. Yeah. And they were just,
Ronaldo,
they were incredible, really. And that, I mean, take Ronaldo out of that team. Would they be the best team? Probably not.
Yeah,
but
where's Brown at right back? He was the best right back in the world this season.
Fine. Makes a great point.
Edwin Ma says, question for the front three.
That's us.
Benzema or Suarez? Who's better? Suarez. Come on, mate. I know you love these questions, Lawrence. These sort of
Suarez, then.
I'd say Suarez, but I think Benzema complements Real Madrid better than Suarez would complement Real Madrid.
Correct. Although I would love to see Suarez in that white kit.
It'd be interesting if they switched. Imagine that. Imagine Messi and Benzema together. That'd be quite nice.
Imagine Messi and Ronaldo in the same team.
Well,
the only time we'll ever probably see that, you know, is in a testimonial. And they'll be too old by then to know if they would have been good together. But I reckon one day that they'll be at each other's testimonials.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting question from Ryan Pecher. It says, is Mignolet better than Courtois?
No.
Considering Liverpool's lacklustre defence in comparison to Chelsea's very good defence?
No.
No, Courtois is a great goalkeeper.
Courtois is,
Courtois,
you know,
Courtois, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think Mignolet is
good.
A number. He's all right.
He's improved after the dropping.
You know, that's credit to him, really. He deserves to win the Golden Gloves because he's improved from the start of the season.
Correct, Dave. Correct.
You know, it's a nice story of someone getting knocked down and coming back up. So we need to see more in the world.
I get knocked down, but I get up again.
You ain't ever going to
Never going to keep Mignolet down.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah,
Do you agree, Youssef says, do you agree with Thierry Henry that
Olivier Giroud?
Olivier Giroud is not good enough
for
Arsenal to challenge for the title next season.
I don't think on his own he's good enough, but I think as part of a threatening Arsenal side, I think he's a sub-on kind of guy.
I'd rather see Arsenal play with Sanchez up front than Giroud. I'm not a fan at all. And I understand what he can do. He's a big physical presence. His first time finishing is absolutely brilliant. Probably the best in the Premier League.
You're right.
But
then why not, Dave?
You're not going to win a Champions League with Olivier Giroud playing up front. You just know.
No, but that's the point. Is you want the variation. They don't have someone else up there. That's Arsene Wenger's fault. That's not Olivier Giroud's fault.
That's not Olivier Giroud's fault. But I think Arsenal needs something else.
Yeah, but
get to where they want to get to. Let's say.
But I'd say keep Olivier Giroud. Something.
He's not maybe the man to fly you to the title.
Not the only man. No.
European Cup.
Yeah, but then Thierry Henry wasn't the only man to fire Arsenal to their side. Pires was alongside him. He had Bergkamp there.
I'd argue though in that 2005-06 Champions League campaign, Henry pretty much carried them to that final.
Maybe
he was pretty good.
We were talking about greatest Premier League teams there. We overlooked Arsenal a bit, didn't we?
Oh, the Invincibles. Yeah, they were good.
They
played. You know what? They played some fantastic. Do you know what? The Invincibles were probably the people's.
The people's champions.
The people's. Yeah. Well, no, that was Blackburn back in '95.
I know. You know, Chelsea 05, that was a pretty insane team.
Yeah, but they're not the people's champ. No one's going to, no human is going to say, Chelsea are my favourite team.
Apart from Chelsea fans.
No, they're not human.
Orlando. Lawrence doesn't speak for all of us. He's a bit into his own. Let me ask you this one. So, does Angel Di Maria suit Louis van Gaal's style of play? And if he does not, can he adapt? And will he be any good next season? Question actually came before Depay signed. But
all right, let's talk about
in light of this guy signing. Does Di Maria have a future? Does he suit the style of play? If he doesn't, is he any good? Is he worth keeping around next season?
Where's he going to fit, Dave?
If he were to fit anywhere, it'd be that left side central midfield role to overlap, similar way he played at Real Madrid to overlap Depay when Depay comes inside. But I think right now is value at the most. The value of a player right now. To sell him now would be the time where you're going to get the peak value, and that's probably what you've got to do with FFP.
Do you reckon they're
going to
get
peak?
Oh, just sell him off
you've
PSG.
Got to, you know, you've got
why
to
you can?
About this, you've got to be a shoot. You know, if PSG.
Who to?
PSG or Bayern Munich? Been linked with them today. Obviously, it's a bit of a strange one, but he could get into a lot of sides. Potentially, Real Madrid might come back.
No.
Do you know? He was excellent for them.
Yeah, but he's not the kind of player. Pérez is not the kind of guy to re-sign someone who goes off. Go to pasture.
So that was the questions.
Yeah,
thank you very much for all your questions.
Thank you.
To submit questions for next week, which will be Thursday, the episode will be out or Friday. Then you just need to hit us up on Twitter at @TheFrontThree with the numeral three, not the word three.
Correct.
So moving on to any other business.
Yeah,
I know Dave wants to talk about Memphis Depay, who we mentioned there. It's been confirmed that Manchester United have signed him, pending a medical. 25 to 30 million is what the BBC is saying is the fee. So, Dave, as a United fan, are you happy? Is this something you're excited about for next season? Is he worth it? Hit me with the stats. Hit me with the knowledge.
Hit me with a little ghetto gospel.
Right now. I'm smiling. I'm very happy. It's an absolutely excellent signing. What I've been asking for all season is this impact player that can do something. You look at Memphis Depay's stats over this season. They're absolutely phenomenal. He's got 21 goals
In
28 games. Excellent, excellent player. He's explosive. The thing that he shoots a lot, he creates chances, he takes people on. That's what United have lacked, is that, the likes of Ashley Young, not explosive enough. And with Memphis Depay coming in, that real explosion. What he also gives as well, which is going to be interesting, is it gives Van Gaal a tactical variation option there with, you know, for example, you can play him in a 4-3-3.
Yep.
You play on the left side there.
Correct.
Or you could play him behind a striker in a 4-2-3-1.
Yep.
Or you could play him in a 3-5-2 that's not worked this season because we don't have that movement horizontally.
Yep. Across the pitch. Horizontally.
Yeah. Sorry, got to it in the end. And Memphis Depay would really do that. You know, he can hit the channels, he can pick the ball up wide, can score goals. He's an excellent, excellent player. Another thing that we, you know, United have lacked for the, you know, since David Beckham or since Ronaldo is that free kick ability. He's scored 6 goals this season from set pieces.
Really?
Some of the goals that he scored have been fantastic. The way he moved the ball.
I didn't know that.
You know, he's a player that can shoot. And I think last season,
mate, he does miss a lot of shots. We do.
He does.
Know that.
This is the thing. He does.
If that can be honed, it would be great.
100%. You know, this season in the Eredivisie, he's had the most shots. He's had 154 shots.
That's a lot of shots.
That's a lot of shots.
How many has he scored?
He's scored 21 goals.
Yeah.
So obviously the chance conversion there, you know,
no,
is a little bit down, but that's
chance conversion. 14%,
but yeah. You take the fact that he's shooting quite a lot from outside the box. You know, he's had 83 shots from outside the area. Sometimes United have broken down at that point. If someone's going to have a go on goal, go for it. Ronaldo used to shoot a lot when he was at United. He used to have a few warm-up shots in the first 15 minutes of game. I'm happy with that. Give him the ball, let him have a go, because he's finding his range, he's finding his distance. If a player has 10 shots in a game and he's, you know, he doesn't score, whatever. Just continue shooting.
What I'd say is if Van Gaal can hone him,
yeah,
and say, you know, maybe get your sighters in, you know, warm-up,
yeah,
then that'd be great. But one thing is Dutch.
Yes,
or at least now relates to being a Dutch person because he doesn't acknowledge his other history.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, go from there. Van Gaal maybe is the perfect guy to hone him. I mean, you know, we see other people bringing young players through. Van Gaal now bringing Depay in. You would say Van Gaal's probably one of the biggest pulls for Depay to play.
Well,
here,
he says he's like a father. You know, a father to him. Obviously, he doesn't speak to his dad anymore, but. You look at Van Gaal's record of young.
He doesn't.
Players.
That's not funny, Adam. It's actually a really touching
serious
story. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you
were. Yeah. No. It's no jokes here.
So you look
it's
at
actually
Van
quite.
Record.
It's actually quite a big story.
It
for
is.
His
yeah,
body,
it's
isn't
it's
he? He's
got
a big narrative.
Player, obviously.
Oh no.
You know that's going to potentially give him a little bit extra than obviously he's gone for a bit of hardship in his life. Give him a bit extra, a bit of fire in his belly, a bit of explosivity that you want as a player. And Van Gaal's just going to take that out. He obviously needs to work on his defensive side of his game. He's really good on the counter attack,
mm-hmm.
picking up the ball. You know, a number of his goals in the Eredivisie this season, and him being played through, and him just like, you know, the keeper's not even there pretty much. The finishing has been absolutely fantastic from him. He takes his chance, and that's what United have also lacked this year. Sometimes on the counter attack with Angel Di Maria, it seems like Di Maria's so fast that the rest of the team's not kept up. And then at the end, Van Persie and Wayne Rooney are still trotting around the centre circle.
Are you saying that Depay's going to be the only player alongside Di Maria?
Well, Di Maria's still there.
Well, yes, that's an interesting question. Is he also an Adidas player? Is Dubai an Adidas player?
I think
player?
He is, yeah. He's
yeah.
Adidas player.
And who's going to sponsor their kit next season?
United, maybe that.
The three stripe.
Political.
The three
yeah.
stripe all over it. That's
what
I'm saying.
Great. What would you like to talk about, Lawrence? Maybe Tim Sherwood.
When does this go out, Adam?
It's either going to go out after we finish on Thursday night or it's going to go out tomorrow morning.
Cool. So this week I have been listening to some stuff that's coming out next week. On the BBC to celebrate basically the 25th anniversary of Blackburn winning the league. I'm going to encourage you to go and listen to that next week because it is there are some incredible stories in there that you just don't get in football anymore because the kind of football is just so different.
Yeah.
All right. All of next week, we will probably hear stuff about them being it just being a different era of football. It's early Premier League years. United have won it twice, and then Blackburn suddenly popped up
yeah.
and won it. I find Tim Sherwood a difficult character to deal with, right? But having heard him be interviewed about this and interviewed surrounded by people who seem to understand him, such as Kenny Dalglish, such as Alan Shearer. I suddenly saw him in a different light and saw him as quite an expressive guy. And I'm not saying that I was wrong about Tim Sherwood because I do think there's a lot he needs to improve on.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I have a new understanding for Tim Sherwood that maybe I didn't feel or have before or have a need to have. And I think, you know, I'm enjoying what he's done at Aston Villa. I want to see him go on and succeed. I just find him intellectually challenging sometimes, and he could be better thought out.
Yeah.
But having listened to him personally on a one-on-one basis now, it does sound as if that's the kind of character that he is.
Yeah.
And I didn't necessarily know him as part of this Blackburn side. So I'd encourage you to go and listen to the BBC doc that's coming out next week to get the context of how Sherwood evolved as a player and how all those players evolved. And then go from there. And all I'm saying is it changed my opinion of Tim Sherwood hearing some of his answers. Yeah. And maybe because of, you know, what's currently going around, which maybe I'm also partly responsible for because I, you know, don't particularly appreciate him. I would just encourage you to go and listen. That's all I'm saying.
What's quite interesting there is I've just seen he was the captain of the Blackburn side that finished second and won the Premier League. I didn't even know that.
And Dalglish picked him. And bear in mind, I mean, this is something we don't see now. We remember Kenny Dalglish as a manager, and I've gone on about him. He's been very much in the forefront of my mind this week. Kenny Dalglish is an incredible football figure in the first place. He's the manager who was at helm when Liverpool went through Hillsborough. He won an incredible amount of things at Liverpool. He was an incredible football player before he went to Liverpool. And he's a Scot. And not only that, but he has won the Premier League with a team. He might look a bit, and this is what I'm saying, is maybe Tim Sherwood and Ken Dalglish hark back to an age before football was the way it is. But there's something about that which we need to keep there. And for that reason, now my appreciation is that Tim Sherwood's bringing something from that era of football to this era of football. And, you know, Kenny Dalglish, he won a bloody Premiership.
What would you say about the, you know, people sometimes say that Rovers brought the Premier League that season, you know, Jack Walker's money,
yeah,
a lot of signings.
Mate, they were newly promoted to the league. Mm. And I think a lot of other sides were scared. Liverpool didn't have a particularly good investment at that time. They actually lost out on a couple of transfers to Blackburn. United fans were a little bit annoyed that Alan Shearer had, in inverted commas, turned them down when actually that wasn't the case.
Time.
Yeah. And I think the point is made, and again, I'd encourage you to go and listen to this doc, but basically, they had to invest because they come up and they had to catch up with everyone else. The point was made at the end of the documentary, basically, and, you know, go and listen to it again. You won't see that now because of financial fair play.
Yeah.
But because of the rules at the time, it was a level playing field, essentially. But the fairy tale story is that it's a local guy who came and invested in his club.
Yeah.
And there's something really incredible there.
And that's, I think that's nice. That's a really nice touch that obviously he's a local lad that's won the league with his local side with a bit of cash that he's earned.
Yeah, and it's not only that, but the details of the story and the fact that it's almost like that can never really happen again now,
yeah,
make it worth something. It's go and listen to it, go and look it up on Wikipedia, go and read the articles, yeah, next week, because they will be everywhere, because it's been 25 years since that. And that team were pretty prolific, and that team were a team of people with stories. So it was you know, the David Batty's in there, those kind of guys, and they're all that kind of laddie generation that bought up the kids that are now out there who are setting the trends of being lads now. So it's worth going back and listening to those guys.
Who needs Zinedine Zidane?
That is the perfect trail for going to listen to this BBC documentary.
When's it
because
out?
It's fantastic.
When
I think it comes out next Thursday.
Okay.
On
but we
Five
can tell
Live.
People next week.
Huh?
Hey, it came out. We can say.
Yeah. Hey, it came out. Go and listen to it,
yeah,
and we'll put a link in the podcast.
Excellent. Okay.
That's all. That's me. No, you don't need to mail
that was
it.
Great.
That's me done. Yeah.
That
Thanks.
Was great.
I've now got to go because I've got to go and be on TV, guys.
Well, let me ask you this really quickly.
Yeah.
If you could have any football manager,
yeah,
as Prime Minister.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Did you even listen to the Ramble this week?
No.
Okay.
Did they say the same exact
thing? I think the opening question is if you could have any football figure. And then Copper 90 today said, which player would you have?
Well, I said manager. I've changed
Okay,
it
which up. Football manager would you have as Prime Minister?
Yeah. Current Premier League manager.
Dave? Current Premier League
right
manager?
Right at the moment, what the UK needs is Jose Mourinho.
Oof.
As PM.
Oof.
We need to change a few things in the country.
Imagine Mourinho and Putin in the same room.
Oh,
Mourinho just being like, Mourinho's probably the only man who could outside,
yeah,
Putin. He's probably the only man who could make Putin like nuke his own country. Do you know what I mean? Mourinho would literally sit there on the campaign bus and be like, I parked the bus. Parked the fucking bus in Parliament.
The most entertaining would be Tim Sherwood. He would be great dealing with all
yeah,
the power leaders.
Yeah,
like the Monsterlady
so
Looney Party.
Yeah,
enjoy.
He'd be so
I'd love to see Pearson. Again, my only political thought is I'd love to see all these managers face up to Putin and see what they do. Nigel Pearson against Putin would literally... Pearson's approach would literally be...
Pearson,
he would take his shirt off and it would just be...
Are you an ostrich?
Yeah, exactly. he's not Australian. But it would literally just be... That would be
great.
His approach. And it would be, fight me. Fight me. Do you know
yeah.
what I mean? Or who else could you go for?
Fergie obviously would be very structured.
Okay.
Yeah, but not current. Brendan Rodgers, I don't think, would make a very good Prime Minister. I think he'd make a great Lib Dem candidate.
Great. Listen, let's wrap it up there. I just want to say thanks for all the kind
comments. Can we not leave it on
comments.
That?
Please? Yeah, we can. Thanks for all the nice comments over the week. There were some really nice comments. Someone said, if you make this an hour long, it would be the best podcast ever. It said Javier Favela.
Top guy, Javier.
Top guy,
could
Javier.
Be the best ever. Yeah. You guys are great. I could listen to you talk for hours. So
thanks, Mum.
So it's very popular opinion on
Mr. Keyboard Warrior to you.
A very popular opinion on the Twitter and the SoundCloud comments was make it an hour.
Yeah,
we haven't quite managed it because you've got a shoe off, but
we're slowly edging.
Yeah,
now,
we're getting towards an hour. So do let us know what you think about the length. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know suggestions. Let us know if you've got any questions on Twitter at the Front Free.
What do you think of the girth of the podcast?
You've gone too far. Yeah. Until next time, where can people find you, Lawrence?
At Lostcast Online. Okay, just go to Lostcast.
Just type in Lostcast on Google, isn't it?
Sorry?
Go just to my website. Just type Lostcast on Google and you'll find it.
Yeah, Google Lostcast. Yeah. Although I do think someone else is trying to steal it. Although if you go to Lostcast.com, then you'll see it there and you'll see I'll have made a little special tab just for this podcast.
Amazing. So look at that. Dave, where can everyone find you?
Get on Google, Squawker Dave. First link. It's me. Second link is about me on a lovely channel called The Full Time Devils. So
really?
If you want.
Great
Full Time Devils. Lovely guys, Full Time Devils.
Great guys.
I love Full Time Devils.
Right, calm down.
No, genuinely. It's probably one of the best YouTube channels around.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. If you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. It's just my name.
Bit self-promoting, isn't it?
Yeah. So on that note, on that self-indulgent, arrogant note. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.